course.
Welcome to Pop Curse Episode 4. I am your host, Ryan J. Downey. Pop Curse is the intersection of all things pop culture. This episode, I sat down with my pal Danny Warsnop in Santa Monica, California. Danny is the vocalist for Asking Alexandria, We Are Harlot, a solo artist, and a budding actor. And we talked about movies. Movies, movies, movies. Danny's done plenty of interviews about music. He's done several of them with me, including a in-depth 2013 cover feature. He's fun. He's funny. That's all you need to know, because we're going to jump right into this conversation with Danny Warsnop. This is Pop Curse. What do you remember about your earliest...
Well, listen, first, we're coming to you picking our teeth out of Original Bitchin' Sauce.
Let's see if Original Bitchin' Sauce wants to sponsor the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not paying for this yet. So if you hear a beep, they refused.
We might even fill in some disgusting brand of...
Yeah. Instead. This is brought to you by delicious Adidas shoes.
So what do you remember as your first exposure to films? What were the first movies you saw?
I've been going to movies my entire life. Like, since a kid, it was like a weekly thing I was going to the movies. And I think growing up in like a really small town, and the nearest thing to go do was a movie theater. So, like, I was always there, and I was always fascinated by movies. Somehow never thought of being an actor until later on in my life. But, I mean, I remember being terrified by the original Hook movie. I remember...
Hook.
Yeah, right?
Nice.
No, for some reason, that fight scene on the ship, like, terrified me when I was a kid. And then I fell in love with Spawn, which in hindsight was an awful movie.
But when you're a kid, it's like you have goggles. Yeah,
yeah, it was great.
You also don't have much context. You haven't seen a million films like it to compare it to.
Yeah. Starship Troopers was great. I was in love with the Blade movies. Yeah, it's always been such an enormous part of my life. And I always loved action movies as a kid. And then now, as I grow older, like, if it's not a comedy, I'm probably... Like, I'll go, but I go out of my way to go see the comedies these days. Which is weird, because I don't act in any of them.
Yeah, you know, they're rebooting Fallen right now.
Oh, I did not know that.
You should try to get in.
Yeah, I should try to get in.
Bring your life full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the Blade films, too. You know, it's interesting. It often goes kind of unheralded in this age of... You know, massive Marvel films. And
I know, but it was so good.
Stuff.
I mean, even though later
it was one of the, and it happened in this dearth where there were like only bad comic films kind of before, mm-hmm. and it was one of the first like truly good ones.
Yeah, and I mean, toward the back end, it got a little bit cheesy, like when Triple H has a Pomeranian vampire. Like that's a little like.
Yeah.
I hope it was a laughing joke between them. Like, let's give Triple H a vampire Pomeranian.
But, that's right, it was a vampire dog.
Yeah. Yeah, the crazy fall thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever
read or heard any of the stories about the making of the third Blade film?
That was on with Ryan Reynolds, right?
Yes, yeah. Ryan Reynolds, Jessica Biel. Very, very just unattractive in that movie. She's so, like a mutant. Amazing story. So Patton Oswalt has like a small role in that movie.
Uh-huh.
And he's told this story in interviews. So apparently... Wesley Snipes, by that point, had become very difficult to work with.
I can imagine that.
The guy who had written, I think, the first two films was writing and directing this film.
Okay.
And him and Snipes weren't getting along, and they couldn't really get Wesley Snipes to do anything, and he would come to set with his big entourage, and just all this making things difficult. So, apparently, he would only turn up to film his close-ups. This is all according to Patton Oswalt. So it's like a lot of stunt doubles, a lot of, like, you know, so... Often, most often, like Ryan Reynolds would be acting against either nobody or a stand-in.
Yeah.
And then Snipes would film his close-ups later. So a lot of these shots where they're having like one-on-one dialogue, he's not even talking to Wesley Snipes. So for fun, Ryan Reynolds and Patton Oswalt would improvise jokes together and just saying the most ridiculous, awful shit to Wesley Snipes, because Wesley Snipes is never going to be there. And it's just all, it's just constantly cutting to like Stoneface Blade, listening to whatever ridiculous thing Ryan Reynolds was saying. So apparently a bunch of things that ended up in the finished film are things that Wesley Snipes had no idea were being said and probably would not have approved of.
No, I can't imagine he was very happy about it after the fact.
Oh, there's another thing too. Wesley Snipes would apparently only communicate with the director via post-it notes. So he would write post-it notes and hand them to someone that would hand it to the director.
I didn't know that. No, that's incredible. I'm super pissed I wasn't old enough to be on that set now.
Right? Yeah, I like all those Blade movies. Even the third one, which, yeah, like you said, towards the back end of it, it got a little not so great. But and then there was the Blade TV series. Did you ever see that?
I never watched it. I didn't have high hopes.
I want to say it was one of the Naughty by Nature dudes played Blade.
Maybe. No way.
It was definitely a rapper. Okay, I might be mixing up which one it was.
No, I mean...
Yeah, Blade TV series, not a good idea. Crow TV series, also not a good idea.
And that was another movie that was so good.
That's my favorite movie of all time.
I don't blame you. My favorite movie is 7 Pounds, which goes against everything I've said so far. Comedies and action movies. Yeah. This is neither.
It was like an actor movie, 7 Pounds.
Yes, it was. No, it's super deep.
Yeah.
It's too, and like for anyone that's listening and hasn't seen it, I don't want to talk too much about it because like every single detail like just pieces this story together. And I mean just the by the end it's so complex and so such a beautiful piece of writing. I mean it's like the whole time you're like, is this guy a like massive dick or like does he not know? Is there something wrong with him? And then yeah, it's watch it.
Who in your family or who around you first showed you movies and would say, like, oh, you gotta see this, and take you?
My cousin got me super into The Matrix, which, I mean, as a...
Which Will Smith turned down, by the way, speaking of Will Smith. Yeah, he was offered the Neo role.
In Neo?
Yeah.
He said no. Huh. Yeah, I couldn't
see
it.
You gotta think at the time, I mean, it was so much, it was unproven, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, no, still, like, why would you cast... Like, I don't see Will Smith in that role.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal actor, but like, you got to be really weird to be like. There's such a strange. I mean, it might just be how Keanu did it, but like,
yeah.
There's such a strange delivery to everything, and like, even the motions are kind of awkward of everyone in the movie, and I just don't see Will Smith doing that.
Yeah,
that's crazy. But yeah, he got me into that. He also got me into other kinds of movies, kinds with breasts in them.
Oh, you mean like Total Recall?
Yeah, like that, but like it's almost like Total Reborn. yeah, it was
movies with pizza delivery men and plumbers,
yeah, if memory serves me right, it was literally over the same weekend introducing me to both. So he just opened two incredible avenues of my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did, and then my father watched a lot of movies. I think more so it was, I don't know if it was even for his enjoyment of it, or if it was just something to do, but yeah, that's who I go to the movies with like every week, and I think it's so we didn't have to talk, but yeah, and then later on in life, I mean, Ben is also a massive movie fanatic, so when I moved in with him, when we started asking, we were going like twice a day.
And he was, prior to you guys being friends, he was in Dubai, right?
Yes, he was living in Dubai.
I wonder what his movie experiences were like there, because there were probably certain films that were like banned there.
I would imagine so. I mean, either that or they're just like really cut down, because like porn is illegal, and so I mean, imagine anything with nudity or a sex scene is either cut out or it's not shown.
Oh, wow.
So they get like 7 movies,
which just makes you want to watch it so much more.
You know? Yeah.
Than if you had access to it, then you're, because then you're just your imagination.
Yeah.
Like,
Zorro was so good. It would have been great without that sex scene. But yeah, then, I mean...
Yeah, he must have grown up thinking like, oh, movies are only like 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
What's this 2-hour movie?
So yeah, then he like, after he moved over and we started like, we were going like twice a day, we'd end up seeing movies twice. Because like, why would we not go to the movies after we've seen everything? Just go see them again. That's a good way to waste money. And
I think release dates now are kind of, much like albums, are kind of more in sync than they used to be.
Yeah.
But I remember even as recently as, you know, I was in the UK for the first time in 2002 or 3. And I remember there was like a Talented Mr. Ripley movie that wasn't ever released here that was playing in the theaters, and I remember thinking it was so exotic. Yeah. Like, ooh, I can go see this. I like, went to the movies by myself in England just because it was like, I'm in England, and there's this film that's not in America.
And that's the thing with tour. Like, when we started touring, we were in the US, so we'd still go, like, every week at least to the movies. And then when we became an international band, all of a sudden we're in Europe a lot. And you can't go to a movie there. Like, I don't speak all of those languages.
Yeah.
They don't care that I'm English. They're not going to change it over for me. So it's, I mean, we did it like once or twice with subtitles, and I don't mind movies with subtitles, but if I already kind of know the movie and the actors' voices and stuff, I can't get into it.
Yeah.
But then after that, when I'm doing Hollow, all of a sudden I'm only in the US again. And Jeff is also a massive movie fanatic, so we would go in every day, and I managed to go through these small phases when I'm not doing anything where I get to go all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been able to go for a long time because I've been so busy. And I missed a lot of movies. Like, I hate missing enormous movies in the theater and then being like, sweet, I gotta watch this on an airplane now.
That was actually going to be my next question, is, you know, it just as the music business and how we purchase and consume and experience music is constantly evolving and changing. Obviously, the same thing's happening with film.
Yeah.
What do you think about the sort of differences of the experience of going into a theater?
I have noticed that unless it's like It or, I mean, not even Star Wars anymore. Like, I didn't see, like, maybe day one, maybe day two, you're getting sellout showings, but people are just not going. They're like, I'll wait a couple weeks and watch it on Netflix.
Or there's so many theaters that something like Star Wars, it's not necessarily sold out because it's playing every 5 minutes in 100 places.
Yeah, I mean, it's most, and like, in the small towns, like when I'm in Georgia, at the cabin or whatever, there's a movie theater about an hour away, and it's a super small town, so everyone goes there. And I went to go see It there, and it was packed. It was like 1 p.m, and it's been out for a week. And it's packed, because, like, people don't have anything else to do.
Yeah.
But then, like, if I'm in Nashville or in Los Angeles, I could go on opening night but without pre-ordering a ticket or anything.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if it's the overpopulation or if people just don't care as much, because they've got so many options of things to do. Going to a movie isn't really it anymore. If you go to one of the dining ones, they're always packed, because people can sit there and drink.
Yeah, and that's becoming more of a thing. It seems like they're, you know, I went to, Because being in the press, you know, I tend to go to a lot of screenings, which happen either on studio lots or in screening rooms, or sometimes they do what's called the all media screening, where it'll be at, like, the Grove or the Arclight or something. Yeah. But I went to, it was funny, I was actually on my way to Comic-Con, and I got stuck in traffic in the City of Industry, and I just, like, got so frustrated where I was like, I'm just going to pull over and see whatever's playing at the mall. Like, whatever the next fucking movie is, if I haven't seen it, like, I'm just going to go. And I
love doing that, though.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's like such a, it's almost sort of timeless, because it can take me back to any point in my life where I've done that.
Yeah.
You know? I went to go see Dunkirk in IMAX by myself, and
I haven't seen that yet.
It
lives up?
It's an experience.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that it's, in terms of story even, that it's that captivating of a film, but it's immersive. And this is actually a great example of a movie that I think has to be seen in that IMAX experience with the music and everything. But yeah, I hadn't been in an IMAX theater in a mall in I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sitting in like a Lazy Boy chair that had like controls
they've got super nice.
It was insane. I had my own little table next to me.
I think it's because there was that boom like right before Netflix took off, when they wouldn't get a movie until like 8 months later.
Yeah.
And so people had to go to the movie still, but people are now getting so much film and TV in such high quality that they get really excited about movies again.
Yeah.
And the budgets are flying up. So there's all these, I mean, especially during a time that, like, it's when the Iron Man's coming out, and the Thor's are coming out, and the Avengers are coming out, and Star Wars.
Serialized storytelling that are like, the shared universes are like TV shows.
Yeah. Well,
it's like, I gotta see the next episode.
And, like, it's just been all these just colossal movies. And it's like, why release you can't release a piece of shit movie now. Because it's like, no one's even gonna bother. Because the standard is so high. As well, during that time, the standard was so high. So
And you don't have to wait a week to read the newspaper to find out if it's good.
Yeah.
So you get on Twitter and all your friends are telling you if it's good.
So, like, the movie theater saw this boom. So they bought all this really nice stuff and Lazy Boys and shit. And then 3 months later, Netflix is like, we'll just put the movies right on here. And then the movie theater's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
We spend all our money and no one's coming anymore.
Yeah, it's like...
So you don't get weird cummy seats in the back anymore, though. That's nice.
That is nice. Well, depending on what kind of movie theater
you're
in. It would be like building some luxurious, massive record store, like, a year before Napster.
Yeah.
You're just like, picking yourself. Fuck. So what do you think about those differences, then? I mean, obviously, you travel a lot, so you're seeing movies on airplanes, you're seeing movies on tour buses.
And however much, yes, you don't get that great immersive experience of, like, a giant TV or a projector or a movie theater. But I'm more and more noticing that the same time movies are hitting the movie theater, they're just going on airplanes now too. And not always paid ones.
Yeah.
What did I watch on my last flight? I forget, but I didn't even look at it because I was like, I'm not paying 15 fucking bucks to watch a movie on an airplane. So I didn't even look. I was watching old movies. And then I was like, well, maybe it's like $3. Maybe I'll do it. I've got like 4 hours left on this flight. And they're all free. Like, movies in theater right now are free. And yes, you don't get that immersive experience, but it's like, it's so accessible now, which is great.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of...
What the economics of that are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how is the studio getting paid for... I feel like American Airlines isn't paying Universal to have their movie on there.
Yeah.
It feels like the other way around. But then there's no income.
One thing I was reading about a couple of years ago, and I remember that I think the Smurfs 2 was the example I was reading about, but these films where you see they have these massive budgets and then they come out and they don't do well. A lot of those movies...
I could have told them that wasn't going to
Yes.
You should have just called me.
A lot of those movies are paid for before they're ever released through advertorial and this integrated marketing where it's like, oh, M&M's and Dr. Pepper gave the Smurfs X amount of dollars to have this scene where there's this gaudy Dr. Pepper logo in the background.
Yeah.
And it's becoming more insidious where, you know, you always think about Wayne's World where it's like, Advil, a little yellow, different, you know, or whatever, like where it had all these like jokes. It's becoming more insidious now where it's, that stuff is in the films and you don't even realize that you're being sold Pepsi or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I see it from the music side. I'm not going to say the brands because I've worked with many of them.
Yeah.
But it's like, people don't realize that they could be looking at a photo of a band and somewhere in the background, there's a green product.
Right. Yeah.
And that was paid for.
Yeah.
Like, someone paid that band $5,000 to have that there.
Yeah.
And the reader isn't even thinking about
it. And it's beyond the level of like, ooh, we get free product because bands aren't... You know, unless you're just starting, like, who cares?
Yeah,
you know?
We get free shit from everywhere. Yeah. The bigger you get, the more money you make, the less shit you're having to pay for anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and I've seen it in the movie stuff. I did, again, I'm going to try not to say the movie, but one of the movies I did, there was a company who came in, and they were literally altering the set. Reps from the company were altering the set, placing their products in, like, very conspicuous places. And it's like...
Turning the labels around. And,
yeah. And it's like, this isn't a set where this product makes sense. This is in a fictional universe where there aren't stores.
Yeah.
Where did they get that? And it's like, everything's all like fucked up and destroyed. And then there's a pristine product sat on a counter somewhere.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it. And I was talking to the director. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, this is gonna look crazy, dude. He's like, I know, but they're paying for it.
Right.
Paying a lot of money to
be there. And it's paying to get the film made or whatever the case may be. Distribution or... Yeah, there's some of these movies, where they sell... Just selling the distribution rights, they've paid for the budget.
Yeah.
You know, the economics of it is very interesting. But what do you think about then the changing... I mean, what's your ideal way that you prefer to see a movie, if you can have your druthers?
Well, I would... I mean... I once had when I was really, really stupid with money, I had a house that had a movie theater in it. And that was obviously the best experience because I'm not having to go buy tickets and like...
You don't have to leave.
I have to sit with a bunch of strangers. But no, I mean, definitely, definitely that big screen in theatre, IMAX or whatever the respective one at the RDX or whatever each theatre has. Like, that's obviously the greatest experience you can see it in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point of it. Like, I don't care how rich the person is, no one has that at home. There isn't, you'd need a separate house.
Yeah.
You'd need a movie theatre.
Yeah.
I mean, even the home ones, like, sure, it's much bigger than television, you know, an awesome sound system, but nothing's going to beat that. People put millions and millions and millions of dollars into making that movie theater the best viewing experience.
Which they need to do in order to keep us coming together at this point because of the competition.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously, I mean, my favorite way to see it. But beyond that, I'm happy to watch in the comfort of my living room. I will never watch one on my cell phone. Like, it's at that point, it's what's the point? That's worse than an airplane.
I haven't done that, but I will confess to watching things on my iPad.
Yeah.
Usually TV, talk shows.
But I've got that way too big iPad.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got a small one.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, my...
But yeah, the phone is like a level of like...
Yeah. Because, like, in tour buses, like, if you're in the bunks, there's usually a TV in there that's a bit smaller than an airplane screen and no headphone sockets. So it's just these shitty speakers. And, like, you can't watch anything on that. But I found if you flip it down, you can tape an iPad to it. I got a big screen, and it's close to my face. It's like I'm watching on a big screen, and I can have my headphones in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I use my iPad for that. I mean, I watch TV and stuff on my computer, but little else.
I mean, yeah, and that's different than, like, I'm gonna watch a movie.
Yeah, because I feel when you're watching on a computer, even when you're watching at home, there's always something else to do. Like, you're checking your phone every now and again, or you're texting someone at the same time. And you're like, oh, I'm going to go get a snack. And then, like, you're kind of, like, looking in your fridge for a while. Whereas in a movie theater, like, you're there. And you don't pull your phone out. Like, you get a text.
Unless you're an asshole.
Yeah. If you're a dickhead, of course you do.
That brings
that's
me...
kind of your MO.
Yeah, exactly. That's the asshole lifestyle.
Yeah.
That brings me actually to my next point that I was going to bring up is I feel like... Being in Los Angeles and going to film screenings and things like that, I'm a bit spoiled because when I do go into, like, Gen Pop to see a movie, I get reminded by, like, how shitty a lot of people are.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's people who bring their 4-year-old child to, like, a hard R-rated film or, you know.
I don't know if it's just them being shitty. I think it's just them being, like, naive and blasé. Like, they're going to go see a movie. They don't really care about the movie. Like, they're not thinking about the plot line or how the character work is. Like, they're just like, oh, we're gonna go watch the story. Like, they're not... It's not a special event for them. Like, someone who loves film, going to a movie, it's like you're following everything.
It's like religious.
Yeah. You're focusing on, like, how every single character's playing and being like, oh, I don't know if he nailed that one. Like, everyone else is just being like, oh, that guy's Steve in this? Cool. Hi, Steve.
Yeah. And they're just, yeah. Oh, they get a phone call. Like,
yeah.
I'm at the movies. It's like people who in public restrooms who answer their phones.
Yeah.
Like, you're standing at a urinal, the guy next to you is like, oh, I'm taking a piss. Where are you going?
Like, really? The best is that you can tell they're going, what are you doing? It's like, nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Not. You're holding dick next to me and having a conversation with your buddy.
Not exactly nothing.
But yeah, it's like the general population just going there and it's like, oh, Neo's... called genre, that's cool, but like that, they just let it see a story be entertained for a little while. Whereas for us, and going to screenings and things, it's like everyone's there to watch and take in the film. And
don't get me wrong, because I think that, like you were saying, opening weekend, for example, of these big event pictures, I love going to those with the masses because the people who are coming out,
especially if it's the superhero ones. Or any of those kind of cult classics or things like Star Wars that have that giant fan following.
Yeah, like, and where you want the, like, cheers and the laughs.
Yeah. And like, there's people dressed up as the characters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's entertainment in and of itself, just seeing that and being in that place. But it's like, everyone in there is there for this.
Yeah.
Like, no one's just going to pass a couple hours.
Have you ever seen the Triumph the Insult comic dog where a bunch of people are... It's one of the massive lines for one of the Star Wars prequels. People are, like, waiting overnight and stuff, and everyone's dressed up or whatever. And they send a guy in a Mr. Spock outfit who walks down the line with his middle finger.
I love that rivalry. Between the Trekkies and the Star Wars people, I love it. It's incredible. And it's they take it so seriously.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which is great,
yeah.
But at the same time, like...
Any self-seriousness is always ripe for comedy, in any...
Yeah, and it's... Yeah. It just blows my mind, that whole concept of, like, one or the other. I think both are perfectly fine.
I celebrate both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they get, like...
Marvel versus DC.
Yeah.
I'll
take both. Why close that door?
Yeah.
But they'll have street fights and shit over it. You could die.
Yeah.
For dressing up as Spock in a Star Wars thing.
I mean, it can be controversial.
It'd be a slow death, let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah, it'd be a very long slap fight.
Yeah.
It'd be people getting tired really fast.
Yeah, how many slaps do they get to the middle of
a Trekkies? Yeah. Yeah, I have a friend who told me a story once about some guys who went to, Trekkies, who went to a Renaissance fair, dressed as Klingons, and pretended that they were visiting medieval Earth.
They stole that from Big Bang Theory.
Did they do that on Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, well, they'd gone to a Renaissance fair, and then Sheldon was bitching about how inaccurate it was. And the other guys wanted to go back the next day, and they said, well, they could dress as Klingons and pretend that it's like an alternate universe. Wow. Where it's like they do have soap made out of honeysuckle and shit. But yeah.
Oh, amazing. I wonder if that was inspired by true events.
One was definitely inspired by the other. That's a show I've been getting really into. And I had no interest in it when it first came out.
And there's a prequel now.
Come on. I know. I'm very interested to see how that plays out. I think that's just a cheap shot for giving money.
A lot of times those are the spin-offs that are like a footnote years from now. Like, did you know there was this spin-off that lasted for 5 episodes?
Yeah.
Or it becomes Frasier.
Yeah.
You know? Sometimes it's like, you know, takes on a life of its own. It's even...
Yeah. And then there was that weird one, there's The Middle now, which it is Malcolm in the Middle, but it's not Malcolm in the Middle. And it's kind of cast blending, but not. And it's just, you don't know what's going on. And that one kid hasn't aged still.
Yeah.
But he's still there with the same dad.
And that brings up an interesting point too in discussing film and acting and all that sort of thing. I've been rewatching The Sopranos recently.
Okay,
I'm almost finished with the final season. I'm getting kind of sad because I got so into it all over again.
Yeah,
and now I'm like,
that was kind of one of those shows where it just polarized everybody, and it was, you couldn't get away from it.
And it started, I think, this era of prestige television.
Yes.
Because one of the, David Chase, the guy who created it, one of his number twos, Matthew Weiner, then went on to create Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch it now, you see all these different actors. I've literally been
told by everyone on the fucking planet, like, dude, you love Mad Men? I'm like, I haven't fucking seen Mad Men.
Oh, man.
I was touring.
It's a top 5 all-time show for me.
Yeah, I mean, I want to. And someone was asking about a TV show. Someone was asking me about Narcos, like, yesterday. And they're like, oh, dude, do you watch Narcos? I was like, there are so many fucking TV shows.
That was exactly what I was going to say when you were finished. That's the thing. And there's so much prestige television, and there's so much that's so great.
How do you... You have to be just a recluse cretin to have time to watch them
to
all.
To see everything.
That, or just like, you were born a billionaire.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't have to work.
I will see every
show. I can just sit here and watch everything.
Yeah. And also,
Paris Hilton watches it, probably.
Probably not.
No, not Narcos. That'll scare her.
Yeah. There's also room in there for junk food TV.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. A lot of prestige television, as much as I love it, I haven't seen because I also go into these detours where I'm like, I'm going to watch Arrow and Flash for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Like, these aren't good, but they're, like, good enough. They're fun, you know? And And it's like you're saying, that's also kind of, no offense to the people who make those shows, because I love them, but I can read a text or get up and get something out of the fridge, and I'm not, like, riveted, you know?
You don't have, like, there's only so many emotions you have. You can't give all of yourself to everything. Exactly. You gotta have just...
That's a great way to put it.
You gotta have just, like, the fun side fling.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not fucking you for your personality.
That's not going to be my wife.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
No.
It's a temporary fling. You know, shows like The Sopranos, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, like those, you know.
Yeah. No one's
marrying. That's
no
the show you marry.
No one's marrying the Defenders.
Exactly. As fun as it is.
Yeah. But you finger it.
Sure. You know, some of those shows make out with a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, so let's do some favorite films. You talked about some of the early influences.
Seven Pounds is always right at the top. I've seen some great stuff. When it came to It, I thought everyone told me It was going to go up there. I gave it a 5 out of 10 purely because of that one little funny kid.
I haven't seen it.
Oh well, but there's a really funny kid. I don't like horror movies though, which I shouldn't say because.
Because you'd like to be in some.
I get asked to be in them. And I don't want to write myself off from that.
In fact, you have been in some.
Yeah, I have. But it's purely from the standpoint of, like, they're not scamming. So at that point, like, kind of loses its edge.
But what about, like, a great horror film like The Shining or...
I mean, I can appreciate
Halloween.
It, but the fact it doesn't, like, I don't get any...
That's what I mean, like, the artistry of it, though. Like,
yeah. I mean, not so much Halloween. I mean, The Shining, yeah, and... The kind of horror movies, like, I don't even know if they can be classified as horror. Things like, what was it, the Fourth Kind or The Fifth Kind? The Alien one? The Fourth Kind.
Yeah, like, right.
That... I love that movie. But I'm like, super into that shit. And
that's like a paranormal horror thriller.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's the stuff I can enjoy more than like someone's gone crazy or there's this monster or like all these killers are coming to get me. Cause in my head I'm like, cool, get a gun, fucking shoot him.
That's the thing. That's the thing is I've gotten especially as an adult, I mean I got really into Krav Maga a few years ago, and went through instructor training and all this, and that changed the way slasher movies in particular when I watch them. Where I'm like, I remember going to see, I think it was Scream 4, and I love the Scream movies, and sitting there and going like, wait a minute, there are 4 grown adults running from one kid with a knife, and they've got him on the other side of the door, and they're all holding the door, and the little knife's poking through, and they're all and I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, if one of them just pushes the door, the knife is going to go like that.
Yeah. Literally just catch the knife.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff.
Like, the second it closes, the knife's going to get caught in that thing, the knife's going to bend. He can't get it out.
Yeah.
And even if then you open it, like, he's going to have been there trying to pull it. You open the door, he's flying back into a wall, probably going to stab himself. You kick him in the wiener and rouse him.
4 of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody... People aren't getting kicked in the wiener enough in those movies. That's
I know, and it removes the realism.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about that, because it sounds contradictory, I think I appreciate more of the paranormal supernatural type horror, because it seems more realistic, even if it's
it's more realistic.
Because then it's at least... Well, if it establishes some rules that make sense within its own little universe...
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay, you know.
Or if it's like just this one of this paranormal being, like, sure, I get why 4 grown people couldn't kill that thing. I don't know how strong it is.
Right.
I don't know if it can be
killed.
That's
a great point, yeah.
Yeah. But if it's just a dude in mask, like, shoot it.
If it's a magical leprechaun who seems to have limitless powers.
Yeah. Like, he could take on, like, 50 people, for all I know.
Yeah. That's true.
But, I mean, other favorites... I mean, to be honest, I love most of Will Smith's movies, period. I love The Lawyer. Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've seen that.
Was it The Lawyer or The Attorney? It was one of those.
The Judge?
The Judge. Not The Lawyer. He was a lawyer.
Somewhere in the legal family.
Yeah, that one was... Robert Downey Jr. is damn near untouchable anyway. Like, just his delivery and just the way he talks as a human... is so unlike anybody. Like, he doesn't talk like he was taught to speak by people.
And that's what's really great when it's him and James Spader together, because neither is Spader.
Yeah.
That's what I love when they're in films together.
I mean, I love all the Avengers stuff. One Hulk movie was awful, but...
I the first time I interviewed Robert Downey Jr., I introduced myself as Ryan Downey, no relation. And he laughed. And then I said, before we get started, I'd just like to thank you for a lifetime of Robert Downey Jr. jokes. And this was years ago. And he very dryly just looked at me and he goes, imagine how I feel. I was like, fuck yeah. like, as advertised. Like, that's exactly what you want.
He's so funny.
He's quick.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. Actually, right after saying I'm not into horror movies, I'm excited. I'm also intrigued to see Mother.
Mm, me too, yeah.
The hype has been so huge, and Jennifer Lawrence is obviously the colossal superstar for a reason.
And talk about polarizing, the fact that people love or hate it, that makes me like, yeah, those are the kind of those are the kind of bands I like.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And then...
Better to be loved or hated than boring.
Exactly. I'm very much excited for the next Jurassic Park. I'm interested to see what they do with that. I'm also very interested in Googling what Chris Pratt's getting paid. Because he basically said he can name his own number this time.
I'm sure.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
So I'm the best
It's friend. Amazing to think pre-Guardians of the Galaxy that he was just the guy on Parks and Rec.
Yeah. Well, one of the greatest TV shows of all time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, but of course. Yeah. But like, not to knock
when I was
show.
Watching it, I wasn't like, he's that gonna, guy's a superhero.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that guy with his shirt off in a movie.
Yeah. People are going to say he's the next Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. They're making a new Bond with Daniel Craig, which I'm very excited to see. Daniel Craig is one of my favorite Bonds.
Yeah, and I like how he fucks with us every time. Yeah, I'm done.
I know.
Okay.
I'll do it. Well, there was,
But he's a real artist. You get that sense.
Yeah.
That he's like,
yeah,
I really am only going to do this if I want to. But yeah. I don't have to.
Tarantino has one movie left. Because he said he was only doing 7, right? And now he's in 6? Or was it 8 and he's only doing 7?
Well, Hateful Eight was 8. That was part of the title.
Yeah, maybe it was 9 then. Because he said he was only going to do so many movies and then he was done. Because he was like, I don't want to be that guy who just keeps making stuff for the sake of making stuff. Like,
and no one tells you it's bad. And,
yeah. He was like going in, he was like, I'm going to do this many movies and then I'm going to quit. It's like I'm just going to, I'll still write. I might do a TV stuff, but like, that's it.
I'm trying to remember what the, because I feel like I read about what this movie is. And I'm totally blanking. You know, he owns a movie theater here in LA.
That doesn't surprise me.
The New Beverly. And they show a lot of, like, this is just something, you know, my single life for the last few years that I've gotten more accustomed to and going to and stuff. He shows a lot of his own movies, like his own prints and things like that. It's classics and exploitation flicks and B movies and just
that makes, I mean, yeah, he's all about that shit.
Yeah, and I've been doing the Hollywood Forever stuff during the summer too with the cemetery.
Okay.
Where they do like...
I've never been to that.
Oh, dude,
I lived here
so
for like
great.
6 years and I never went.
So great. Gotta do it. I just started doing it in the last few years too. I went to like Nightmare on Elm Street, Clueless, like all kinds. They do just great fun movies. Heather's.
Yeah.
And people dress up. Like a lot of people come. Like
that's
at, awesome. At Elm Street there were a million Freddy Kruegers. But then there were also Johnny Depp's with like the headphones and like the
and then,
shirt.
Yeah. And then Clueless, there were like a bunch of Freddy's.
I wish.
There's a bunch of Freddy Krueger. Johnny Depp was actually there, dressed as Freddy Krueger.
Alicia Silverstone showed up to Clue. They also have like surprises like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, cast members and directors. And
I don't know why they haven't asked me.
Movies. which one? For Devil's Caramel?
Clueless.
I'm gonna write a letter.
Yeah, I played the Chardonnay. And then, what was the other thing? I was reading yesterday about, I forget his name, but the Bond who only did one... James Bond.
George Lazenby.
The Swedish dude?
It's punk rock to say that he's your favorite.
No, he isn't.
I think he was,
Is that guy, is the Swedish guy, or...
I think it was Australian.
Oh, yes, Australian.
Yeah. And there's a documentary called, I think it's called Becoming Bond.
Yeah.
It's about him.
Yeah, so it's... He was
a male model, he'd never acted
in his life.
It's an amazing story.
And he
gets the biggest role in the world.
He liked going in, went to Clooney's hairdresser and like, asked for a James Bond haircut. Went to the tailor that does all Clooney's stuff, and they didn't have quick enough time, but there's one
Connery.
Clooney had turned down. And then, he got to the final audition, and he basically, like, broke down. He was like, listen, I've got to admit to you, like, I've never spoken a word on camera in my life. I don't know how to act. Like I don't know. And the guy was like, well, you've just fooled two of the most baddest people I've ever met in my life. So, keep your mouth shut and make sure you get it. Like, if you can fool them, you can fool anyone.
And there was a thing where he came to the premiere with, like, a beard, and he was kind of hippied out. Like, it was, like, a very punk rock, like, fuck James Bond. Like, move, you know?
Yeah.
Where the producers were like, we're going to have this guy back for more.
Yeah.
Like, well, he was the only one and done. Because Timothy Dalton did 2.
Yeah, but I'd only read about... I don't know how I stumbled across it, but it was...
It's on Hulu, the documentary.
Yeah, it was a great story. I've got to watch the documentary. I haven't seen it.
He's on Her Majesty's Secret Service. That was the one he did.
Yeah.
And it's also an interesting Bond film because it's the one where he gets married. He has a wife. Mm-hmm. His wife dies, and, you know, spoiler. And that's, you know, because those movies aren't really serialized because it's almost like they're rebooting every time. Like, there's very few... There's like hardcore canon of happened last time, so now this happened.
Well, I remember there was an uproar in one where Daniel Craig had ordered a beer or something.
Someone asked him if he wanted his martini stirred, and he made some comment like.
Yeah, it was on an airplane scene, and like everyone's up in arms, and
yeah,
because that's another fan base where it's like they're so like,
oh yeah,
this is the right way to do it, even though everyone has done it differently.
Well, and people were up in arms that he didn't have the right hair color.
Yeah,
and, you know, but then. I always love those stories, you know. I mean, like Heath Ledger. People are like, the Joker? The guy from 10 Things I Hate About You? Like, this is ridiculous. And then it comes out, and it's like, oh, here's your Oscar.
Yeah.
We're very sorry, Mr. Ledger, now that you've literally died for this role.
I mean, that was so... Yeah. That's one of the best acting performances of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's out of this world.
Yeah, and it's and to put such a stamp on a character like that, too, it's, like, hard to, you know...
Yeah. And especially, I mean, that whole Batman Enterprise, it's evolved and changed so many times, but people are still, like, stuck to, like, this is the way it should... Like, whatever the last one was, that's the way it should be done.
Yeah, every time. Yeah. And you know, it's very similar. You and I were just talking about this the other day. It's just like records.
Yep.
This record doesn't sound like the last one. The last one's a classic. I wanted more of that. Yeah. And then you get to the next record,
Frank,
and
shut
it's
up.
The you same
do,
shit again.
You do not want Jim Carrey again. Do not fucking lie to me. Yeah, one of my favorite Bond things I'd seen, there was a debate about them having a black James Bond. People were losing their shit. I mean, part of me, because there was also speak for a while of them doing one where it's a woman. And, like, I kind of get it. Like, the character exists already. Like, the character is a described person.
Well, rather than gender swapping, why not create a new character for a woman who's...
Which, I mean, that's kind of what they ended up doing with, what was that movie that came out a while back?
Atomic Blonde?
Yes. Where that was essentially the female Bond.
Yeah.
And, like, it makes sense. And, like, I get how we live in a world now where, like, you have to be so PC and, like, why can't James Bond be black? And it's like, it's not that he can't be black, it's that he isn't. Like, this is already a character. It would be a different character, which is fine. But it just isn't. And it'd be like, I don't know, us going in and Anakin Skywalker's a girl. And they're like, well, he isn't. He's a guy who's been established already. And it's like, well, you're sexist then. It's like, I'm not. It's a fucking person.
Yeah, it's a fictional character. You can change it. Yeah, but it's a character that's been...
Yeah, it's not the first time we've seen him.
Yeah, exactly.
There are literally hundreds of books about this guy.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, people have all got a lot of opinions. And, I mean, it's the same thing when we were talking with music stuff. It's people believe they know the way it should be done, and any other opinion is wrong. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, as long as it agrees with theirs.
I thought it was interesting when Doctor Strange was coming out, because people were mad.
How did you feel about that movie?
I liked it. I thought that the casting's great. He's great as Doctor Strange. I think it kind of fell into this, and this is, look, I mean, we're spoiled by too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think it fell into a little bit too much of the Marvel blueprint of... egotistical billionaire has this fall from grace and is humble, and then the world's gonna end, space villain kind of thing.
I didn't think it flowed very well.
It was a little choppy.
It set up really well, and then it went right from setup to ending.
And every woman in the movie's like totally undercooked.
Yeah,
I mean, he has no like female protagonist or counterpart. But it was interesting though because people complained about the role of the Ancient One being whitewashed, and I understand the outcry because in the comic book that's an Asian character, but what, they don't get any bonus points for gender swapping because the Ancient One's an Asian man.
Yeah,
and they made him into a white woman. Well, but also the Ancient One's like a kind of racist character.
Yeah, there's no
much like the Mandarin, the Iron Man villain.
Yeah.
Like that's like a total like stereotype character.
You see, I wouldn't.
I think
they're
touching.
They're scared of it because it is a touchy subject in today's climate, and it is. It is a very kind of, well, we've got to be politically correct.
Hey.
I personally would love to see one of these movies with, like, a super racist character. Not, like, not like where it's just cliches, but even the character himself just has this, like, it's not even like you hate to love him, or you love to hate him, it's just like, I fucking hate that guy. But like, to play it so well, and it just be that edgy thing where it's like, he says nothing that you are supposed to say. Just kind of, hopefully, shake people to where they're like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, he said ain't even that bad, because, like, this guy, like, he said this, and that's not so bad compared to this. And, like, maybe, like, so a character coming in like that would shy back on a lot of stuff that people freak out about for no reason. Like, they need a villain.
The idea that, I mean, the thought police, the idea that people can't, especially in universities, this is a big thing right now, and it's like, you go to university to be challenged and provoked and have your ideas argued.
Yes.
You know, like the
point.
Yeah, exactly. Like the idea that you can't, like, oh, I can't hear anything that might upset me.
Yeah, no, people have become soft for it. They don't want to.
Well, I am, just so you know, I am working on a biopic of the story of Asking Alexandria, and I am casting a black woman as Dani Warsnop. Is it?
I am a black woman.
And so, it's true to life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I am.
Ben Bruce will be played by Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Just, you know. Such a resemblance.
I like it. The gender swap.
Exactly.
No, I love it. Okay, we've actually discussed doing a biopic for a while. And I'm actually...
They've been talking about The Dirt for like years and years and years.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Years.
But try and get those fucking four dudes in the room together.
Yeah. And all 17 other
yeah,
managers
without
and lawyers.
Yeah. But no, I've started writing for and actually started recording for just a short like docu-series that's animated about the kind of the inception of the band. And
animated would be fun because you can do a lot of just
And we've got an animator, and I've recorded all the audio files for the first episode, and we're hopefully going to try and get that out in like the next couple months, at least the first episode.
Yeah.
Like we're having a lot of fun with it. I decided to do all of them in a day, and I did like 5 episodes, kind of like one for each album. And, like, I've had some really dark times. So, like, there's the middle bit there where it's like, I have nothing funny to say. Like, I'm just like, and then I was sad. So, I've kind of, between Ben and I, we've decided which ones I'm going to do and which ones he's going to do. Just so that, like, I mean, Reckless or Relentless... Like, I went through so much traumatic shit. They're like, I have no funny stories about that. It's like, and then I did heroin and nearly died.
Waka waka.
And I left the studio.
Rimshot.
I disappeared for 3 months on a cocaine and heroin binge. So Ben's doing that one. And then I think together we're going to do the third one. He, for obvious reasons, does the fourth one. I wasn't there. I'm sure I've got many funny stories.
I was going to say, it'd be kind of great if you did it, actually.
Yeah, I've got a lot of great stories during that time. None of them include them. And yeah, then now I'm going to do the last one. And yeah, I think, I mean, we're going to have a lot of fun with it. This anime, I came up with the idea after seeing the Foo Fighters thing. Where it was just Dave talking about the album, and it was like kind of sketched.
Yeah.
And I was like...
You know what else is great like that is the Ricky Gervais show that they had
on
HBO. Was,
well, that's what came in
the
head.
Podcast, and then it
was that's what came in
Carl Pilkington's telling some dumb story, and they're like showing it. Like, what if you woke up and you were inside a spider, and then they can animate it, you know? Because
that was what came into my head because I love that show.
Yeah, me too.
And I texted Ben about it, and I was like, "What do you think about doing something like this? But not just doing it like Dave did, where it's just this new album. We do like the entire timeline of Asking, because we've talked about doing a movie and." There's just so many moving parts, and we're all so busy, we'd have to use outside actors, or it'd take 5 years to shoot. And the way I'm aging, that just ain't gonna make sense.
Trying to play yourself when you were, like, 19?
Yeah. We're there, like, a week has passed in the movie, but again, Ben's gained 20 pounds. So, I mean, I don't know if we're gonna be able to get around to doing a movie. It just doesn't... Makes sense. We're talking about loosely, and this is a conversation I'm with Ash, loosely basing a movie on it. Like, taking the situations we did that we were in and making it into a movie rather than it being a biopic. Like, just kind of take that and use it as influence for it. So I think that's the closest
thing. Like a fictionalized band that has, like, events inspired by true events.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a couple things in American Satan like that, but obviously...
I was going to say American Satan 2.
Well, yeah, that is a fictitious movie. Like, there's the fucking devil in it and shit.
Yeah, and Andy's fans are still having trouble wrapping their head around the idea that that's not him singing.
Yeah.
Like, they really don't understand.
Like, why doesn't he sing like that in Black Veil? He can't sing like that. Nothing against him, he can't.
Hey, David Lee Roth can't do what Sammy Hagar does.
Exactly. You know, it's a different
A lot cooler.
Yeah, way cooler. Yeah, I mean, hey, all respect to the Palo Real guys, but there's a reason Black Veil here and Palo Real down here. Like, Andy's doing just fine. But yeah, I just think this animated thing is going to be really cool, because it gives fans a lot of insight, especially into the very beginning. Like, every story we've told about it was pretty much a lie. Because we just make shit up. Because, listen, the amount of press we do, like... I mean, if you, like, just with a little bit of research into, like, how did Ask Alexandria get their name? There are, like, 8 different versions.
Yeah.
And, like...
As there should be, because that's the worst question. I mean...
Yeah, no.
If the interview hasn't walked in the door with that already...
We already hate the question from the beginning, so we just made up stories every time, and they were never the same. Eventually, people caught on and were just like, yeah, we're just not going to ask them that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just... It's not even, like, a lot of it isn't even lies. It's just, like... That's never come up. Like, how did Ben and I meet? It's never come up in an interview. It's been like, how did the band form? But like,
yeah,
the band was me and Ben for like 6 months with no other people. So it's, and it was really slowly formed. And I was the guitarist. We had a different singer and then no singer. And then an American singer got deported. I actually need to put that in. I forgot to mention that. He was literally there for 3 days and got deported.
Please, can I voice the American singer in the cartoon?
Yes.
Can I make him like the most stereotypical American ever? Hey, bro, want to go surfing? Get a cheeseburger.
But yeah, there's just a lot of stuff in there that I think would be interesting for the fans, and like, I'd love to see animated because like I get to relive it.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, there's a couple movies and TV things that I have in my head that I'd love to make one day, but. Primarily, I want to be the next Batman. I think that'd be great for me. Or the next Thor.
Thor's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, either one.
People are sick of Liam Hemsworth, but Chris Hemsworth. Is it Chris?
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah,
Chris.
Well, you know, they're sick of him now.
They're
right?
Talking about.
They need a better looking one.
Well, they're talking. I mean, he is very unattractive.
No.
Women hate him.
Yeah. When he first came out, I was like, no way, Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito getting a lot of airtime in this.
He is. I'm going to try and work him into every episode.
This episode is sponsored by Danny DeVito.
One of my favorite things I've ever heard my dad say was when the movie came out about Jimmy Hoffa, and I think it was Jack Nicholson playing Jimmy Hoffa, and Danny DeVito played his bodyguard. I just remember my dad was like... but he was like, really, Danny DeVito... Jimmy Hoffa's bodyguard. He's protecting him from other mobsters.
Well, I'm not sure Danny DeVito would be offended by that. I'm sure he was a little confused at the casting as well.
He's like, wait, entertained.
I was just next door for the Penguin. I think I'm in the wrong set.
Can I still wear this?
Yeah. He's like hey, get back!
Why does Jimmy Hoffa's bodyguard smell like fish? Oh, yeah, what I was going to say was, so Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, a lot of those guys, their Marvel contracts are up, and you know, there's a lot of speculation that in this Infinity War movie, some of those like OG Avengers characters are going to...
You think they're going to do that, though?
That's what they're... I mean, Robert Downey Jr. was finished a couple movies ago, and they got him to re-sign.
Well, he's the highest earning out of all of them.
That's the other thing, is those guys are expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, but the movie's making so much money!
Right.
Like, they can't make flops now. Like, they've reached that point when I was like, you can't fuck it up.
Yeah,
if they fuck it up, it's because they changed people.
It's funny when those movies come out, and it's like, oh, Ant-Man, it only did a gazillion dollars.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
I like that movie!
Me too. But it's like the ones that are small in the Marvel Universe are still...
And I, like, I know I'm maybe in the minority with this, but I love, like, the second I heard about it, I love the idea of Paul Rudd as a superhero.
No, he's great.
Because he's funny, and, like, he's not, like, this fucking jacked up dude. Like, it's like, that could be me.
You could be Ant-Man.
Yeah, I could be Ant-Man.
When Paul Rudd's...
When, if his contract's up, I mean...
Somehow we're talking about Clueless again. He's in Clueless.
That's right.
He's the ex-step brother turned boyfriend.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think they'll make a massive mistake if they switch that cast up. It's so synonymous with the roles now.
But eventually they're going to have to.
No, eventually they should stop making them.
They won't.
I know they won't, but
they're
talking
about rebooting Twilight.
I know. Oh, it's so fucking stupid. It's like 99... It's like fucking... Like, all of the other movies we've tried this, like, hadn't failed.
Yeah.
You'd think, like, they were like, well, it's never gone wrong before. It's literally never worked. Like, see a point, and, like, okay, once a movie, like, sells slightly less than the last one, we're like, all right, we're done. I'll do one more and say it's the last one.
Yeah.
And then don't do another one.
Yeah.
Maybe in 20 years. When, like, we've got this crazy new technology and you're actually inside the movie.
Remake it then. That's like Friday the 13th, part 4, the final chapter.
Yeah.
And then there were 6 more.
Yeah.
And reboots.
But don't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of different in music. Like, when Ozzy...
Final tours.
When Ozzy did his last tour in, like, 98.
Yeah.
And he's still on tour, like, 9 years later.
Yeah, he's on tour, like,
but 19 years later. Yeah, but I mean, it reaches a point, and we've seen it a million times with movies. It's usually after the second one, but somehow Marvel are keeping it going. It just reaches a point where they're just too money hungry.
Marvel's figured it out where it's all one big interconnected movie.
Yeah.
And every other studio is trying to imitate it, and no one's pulled it off.
Well, no, because...
I mean, DC's the obvious example, but even, like, they're trying to do a Universal Monsters universe. That Tom Cruise Mummy movie came out and was a huge flop.
Oh, that's what I watched on the airplane. That's what I watched on the airplane.
And so you saw Russell Crowe as Dr. Jekyll.
Uh-huh.
Because that the idea was to then... That's.
I didn't mind him as Jekyll. I didn't like the movie.
I didn't see the movie.
I didn't like it very much. It was like same way in Doctor Strange. It was like a cool setup, but the setup was like 10 minutes. And then the rest of the movie is the ending.
Yeah.
They just really drug that ending out. And it's like, there isn't a beginning, middle, and end. It's just like, the whole time, like, what the fuck is going on? Like, how did, what's... Is this like 20 minutes in time stretched out over 3 hours? Because that's how it feels. It feels like the movie, the story of the movie is 20 minutes long. But you're watching it for 3.5 hours, like it's in slow motion or something. Or you're seeing everyone's 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But not in a cool way.
Ooh, and that's a movie where they spent a shitload on it,
yeah,
thinking it's going to kickstart. And it's Johnny Depp is the Invisible Man. Like, they've cast, like, they announced the cast. Benicio Del Toro, I think, is the Wolfman.
I don't think that's going to do well.
And it's just like, yeah. And then what do you do when the train's left the station? You know, you've put the first one out and it fails.
Yeah.
I mean, or do you keep going?
I mean, at that point, I'm sure they've signed more than one contract with these guys for movie. Like, be it they've done, like, all right, you get one of the group and then all of you get your individuals. It's like, why? You're beating a dead horse.
Yeah.
Just be like, I'll pay your contract off.
Which happens, those pay or play fees.
Yeah.
You know, I interviewed Ryan Reynolds for Green Lantern.
Yeah.
The press had all seen the film the night before. It was coming out in a couple weeks or something. And he's great. I mean, he's just like you would think he is. He's awesome, right?
Yeah.
But sitting down with him, it was so clear, like, he knew the movie was terrible.
Yeah, he knew.
And this is the next day after people are starting to see
and
it.
And he's still his jokes about it in Deadpool and stuff are incredible.
Now, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was just like, he's so
good. Don't make
down,
the super,
you know?
Suit green.
Or animated. But yeah, so I'm asking him in the interview about sequels, and his answer right away was like, well, you know, in the comic books, there's a lot of different characters have taken on the mantle of Green Lantern, and I think maybe we should see, you know, this was Hal Jordan's story. I think the next one should, it was like he's already, like, talking his way out of it.
Yeah.
That's what's crazy.
And then, maybe give Chris Evans the next one.
and you know that movie was directed by... Martin Campbell, who did Casino Royale.
Yeah, but you can't polish.
So it's like,
you can't polish shit.
It's like the thing. Nobody sets out to make a bad movie.
No.
Just like, I don't think bands set out to make a bad record.
No, sometimes. but if you're going into it with the wrong tools, if the script isn't right, and just the storyline doesn't...
If the suit's green and animated.
Yeah. I mean, you have two options at that point. It's you either make it really funny and like make fun of itself, or you make a shit movie.
Yeah.
Or you don't do it.
Yeah.
But at that point, they're tied in and studios bought it.
He met his wife. She's in the film.
That's
true. Married, you know.
Yes.
Silver lining.
Yeah.
So do you want to... Would you write something for yourself as a vehicle?
Well, I've never even attempted any form of script writing. I think maybe one day. Like, once I've... Because, I mean, keep in mind, I haven't done this a lot of times.
So yeah, that was my next question. Like, what are you looking to do? What kind of roles
I would like to do as much as possible. I would love to do some rom-com stuff. I love those movies, and they're always so much fun. I'd love to do just a dumbass comedy.
I've heard your American accent.
Right?
Much better than Gerard Butler and many others who try and fail. It's harder than people
think. Yeah, I'm these next two movies coming up, I'm American in them, and it was after the table reading, because I was on the phone the whole time before, like, because I'm setting shit up in, like, my other avenues of work, so, like, I wasn't even in the room until we're starting to read. So I come in, and, like, they hear that we're waiting on Downey because he's outside. So everyone's thinking like, oh shit, is it like a big movie star coming in? No, it was just me. And they have no fucking clue who I am. So I walk
in. They're like, Danny Glover?
Yeah. So I walk in and they're like, oh, is this the guy's assistant or something? And then I sit down, and so we start reading. So I'm American from the start. And afterwards, like, everyone's talking and, like, we're kind of giving notes on the script. And I start talking, and, like,
everyone's like, what's this accent you're doing now?
It's a very unconvincing English accent, dude. What are you, your husband or something else?
English accent I've ever heard. It's so fake.
I've been working on it, and I'm still working on it more, because obviously by the time it comes to shoot these things, I don't want to be that guy who just gets mocked for being like, oh, no.
Well, speaking of your boy Will Smith, there was the movie about the football concussions. Yeah.
Well, that one was so wild that it's like, that guy didn't even have that accent.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't really fuck up the accent from that place, but that guy didn't have it.
I saw Will Smith making a joke where he was saying there was a stand-up comedian from that country who was saying that Will Smith did a good job of doing that accent as someone from that country with a head injury. But Will Smith was like repeating the joke himself.
Yeah.
Because he thought it was funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can only, like, he gets fucking $25 million to be bad at an accent.
Yeah.
I'll do that all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can do a shitty accent from almost anywhere you name. $25 million.
For much less than $25 million, in fact. $2,500. How much time do you
need? Yeah, $2,500 for all of them. I'll do every country. Really badly. But no, I've been working on it, and, like, a lot of English actors, when they're doing it, they're obviously in England, so they have to find, like, a voice coach or something like that. Like, I live in America.
And you're surrounded by Americans all
day. Yeah, like, if I'm like, oh, I want to study the American accent, I'm like, oh, hey, you're in my house and you're American. Let's have a conversation. Don't think it's weird when I reply in not this. So, but, like, my lady...
Go to the grocery store and trick me.
Yeah, and I do that. I've done that a lot to, like, try and see if people catch it. Or if people, are like, where are you from? Like, if it's just, like, weird to them. But, like, I get away with it more time than not.
That's good.
But yeah, I try and do it at home a lot. And the missus absolutely hates it.
Because it's, like, a different person.
It makes her super uncomfortable, me, with an American accent. Like, it really, really, she doesn't
it's
like it.
It's like you're wearing a Halloween costume when you come home.
So I do it all the time. And, like, I do different ones. Like, I try and do, like, these, like, super Bible Belt Christian ladies is, oh, bless your heart.
That's from you living in
Nashville.
You're
going to hell. But how long you'll be for? Like, days at a time. And that's all she gets. So my home life is awful. But yeah, I mean, I'd be intrigued to do a role in which I am English. Especially after doing all of them in American.
Or if you did a role where you're from a different part of England.
Yeah.
Or if you did like a Manc accent.
Oh, I have to figure it out.
I was going to say, as an American, I don't even know how much Americans can tell. But
I've changed my accent when I was younger anyway. Like, it used to be super broad, and it was like, no. And I changed it from that, because I'm like, I want to be on stage, I want to be singing. Like,
yeah.
I don't want to be talking to the crowd, and they don't know what the fuck I'm saying.
Like, when,
So I wrote to it!
when the Oasis Behind the Music aired in America.
Yeah.
Every time, and they didn't do it for Noel, but every time Liam's on screen, there's subtitles. He's speaking you fucking
don't,
English.
You don't know had something to do with it. But yes, I've already changed my accent, so I think I could probably do a few different English ones. But after doing...
You've also spent so much time in America.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've absorbed so much of it. So I think...
You probably go to England and people are like, you're losing your accent.
No, people think I'm American in England.
Yeah.
If I go over there, people, like, in America, people are like, oh, England, or Australia, or somewhere like that. England, or maybe the complete other side of the world.
I have a neighbor who's German, and the first time I met her, I was like, oh, what part of Germany are you from? And she was like, oh my God, she was floored. She was like, everyone thinks I'm Russian, or Danish, or French, or like, and I'm just
why
like...
Why do they go Danish?
I'm just like...
but yeah, I think after doing a bunch of movies with an American accent, the general American populace is just going to think I'm American. And then I'm interested if I do an English one, if they think I have a good English accent. I just want to see their reaction there. And so like,
I don't buy it.
It's so like, if I see reviews...
It's like he's never been there.
Yeah, I see one of those YouTube compilations where it's like, worst British accents from American actors. And then, yeah. I'm like, number one, like, this is bullshit.
That would be
like,
an amazing achievement.
Yeah, no, I mean, I kind of want to do a really shitty English accent in the first one. Just because I want to make that list.
I always found it interesting how many English punk bands sound American when they sing. And then, I call it the East Bay British. Bands like Rancid and Green Day sound British.
Yeah.
And they're singing.
Yeah.
And then they're speaking in between songs.
And I never picked up on the Green Day sounding British thing until I saw something online about it. And then all of a sudden it clicked in my head. I was like, this whole time I've been like, what the... that accent is not from anywhere. Like, what are they doing? And they're just trying to badly emulate Mick Jagger.
Yeah, it's like they're doing a...
Whose also accent is from nowhere. So it's like... They're just trying to sound like they're from Mick Jagger land, which is a small town in England compiled of one house and one person.
It's its own country at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
I saw, and he has enough kids and ex-wives to
populate
history,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Bill Maher made a joke the other night that Melania Trump doesn't have a first language.
That's, yeah.
Oh, man. So, all right.
I cannot wait for one day the movie about Trump.
Oh,
about
yeah.
this whole presidency, that movie's gonna be awesome.
I feel like we're watching the movie right now, the reality show.
I would like, I mean, obviously Alec Baldwin first, but like when this comes, like when it's made, like if he's dead, like
yeah,
I'm
depending on how many years from now. Yeah.
Well, if it's in 5 years, I'll have aged just enough.
Have you seen the the art of the Funny or Die Art of the Deal with Johnny Depp?
Yes,
Trump?
That was amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it's all like period.
You could tell it was Johnny Depp still.
Yeah.
But like, it was really funny.
Yeah. It's fucking great.
The little kid, he's swapping the kid out.
Yeah. 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 So good. So landing the plane, I mean, obviously, I think just hanging out with you and knowing you, that you'd be great in comedies.
Yeah.
How do you get those? What do you do? What's the...
I have no idea. That's probably why I haven't done any yet.
I mean, because you know.
I think the next step for me is that I've got to like actually suck it up and be like, okay, acting is an actual career of mine now. I need an agent. And I mean, there is.
Well, how have you been getting roles so far? Because you've been getting work. I mean, obviously.
Backstage.com.
You know.
I'll take another 3 years membership, please. yeah, I mean, a lot through Backstage, and then a lot through just kind of spreading the word with people I know who kind of do stuff in movies.
Yeah.
I mean, like, hey, it's something I want to do. Like, that's how I got Devil's Carnival. They just reached out to me, and I'm like, hey, how do you feel about being in the next one? And it's actually because Andy and I went to the premiere, and they asked both of us, like, if we'd do it. And Andy was like, no, I'm a leading man. Danny can do it. So I did it. and then, I mean, obviously I'd done What Now, which was Ash's movie anyway, so
yeah.
I got that. And then from there, it's literally just been kind of like planting bugs in people's ears, being like, hey, I don't have experience, like I'm an agent, and I'm not SAG or anything, so Like, directors love that. And casting agents love that because they're like, sweet, we don't have to pay them as much.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there's no rate?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how does that work? How long can you get away with that? Because don't you have to join at some point?
No, technically I could go my whole entire career. There's some like massive A-list actors who aren't anywhere. It's PRS and SAG, right? They're the two? Or is there another one?
Those are the film ones that I know. Yeah. TV ones are different.
So, there's a lot that...
AFTRA, that's one of them, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's the one I'm in from TV stuff, from hosting shit.
And then...
I get like $15 a year from doing something on the E-Channel like 17 years ago. Thanks, AFTRA.
Right? But no, there's a bunch of like A-list guys who like, don't have anyone. I think it's primarily because they're big. They landed a big role.
Bill Murray, I think, is one, right?
Where they're like that.
You landed, have to like fax him.
Yeah, he landed a really big role when he was a nobody, and from there he could set his own price. So he didn't have to go that middle stretch of earning shit.
Somebody to get into auditions and all that stuff.
And then he, like, at that point, he could be like, no, I'm not with the union, but I also want $5 million. And they're like, well, no, I want Bill Murray in my movie.
I was also in Caddyshack, so.
Yeah, I want Bill Murray in my movie, so here's $5 million.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy not splitting it with anyone.
Well, I think the crossover from music is it can be a help and a hindrance.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, because you can't just.
Because everyone, I'm sure, is like, oh, I'm doing this movie about a band.
Oh,
I
want to
be the guy in the band. Uh-huh. It's like, no, I want to act.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy in the band in my real life.
Yeah. A lot of it as well is, it's safe to say most singers want to be actors as well. Because you don't...
It's performing.
It's performing. And like as singers, it's like you want to be in the spotlight. Like however much many won't like to admit it, like that's why you do this job. There's a reason you're not a drummer. Like you want to be in the front, you want to be the center of attention, you want to be the one talking to people. So acting is just another way. Like everyone who goes into acting in their head is like, I'm gonna do what Chris Pratt did. I'm gonna come up out of nowhere. I'm gonna be a millionaire.
Yeah.
They forget that dude's a really fucking good actor.
And can do a lot of different kinds of things.
Yeah, and not a phenomenal musician. We know that from Parks and Rec.
Mouse Rat.
Yeah, not bad, but not great. But I think a lot of singers and musicians go into it, and they're just really shitty actors. They assume because they can perform on stage that they can perform.
And that's something that I've noticed is that in somebody who has spent a lot of time covering people from both worlds, every rock star secretly wants to be a musician.
Yeah.
And every musician secretly wants to be a movie star.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, it's like there's so much...
Yeah.
Fascination on both sides of the fence. You know? I mean, Johnny Depp's the ultimate example of, you know, a frustrated rock star.
Well, I think a lot of it is...
I think it's easier to go from music into film than the other way.
Correct. Well, because it's a very... Like, someone's writing for you, someone's telling you what to do, when to do it, and you get...
And also, once you're established as an actor and then you try to do music, people are like, oh, it's that actor doing music.
Yeah.
Whereas when a musician shows up in a film, you're like, oh, cool. Like,
yeah, if it's...
I love Ice Cube.
Yeah, if
now
it's...
he's in this movie,
if it's
great.
An actor going into music, you still are starting out in music. If you're a big musician going into a film, you can pretty much start in the middle or upper middle because you're so recognizable already.
You're established.
But I think one of the main things it is actors all want to be rock stars. They don't realize that rock stars don't make the money that actors do. So all rock stars want to be actors.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's as the music industry declines, musicians are like, wait, that dude just got $30 million to act for a month? I could do that!
Yeah.
Like, probably not, though. That guy's literally been training to do that his whole life.
Yeah.
Same as he could do your job.
As hard as you've been working at music since you were 14,
he's been working like that. He's been working like that with more rejection.
Yeah. Wow.
All musicians are told is yes. Like, professionally, we are told yes by everyone we work with. Actors are literally told no all of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. And there's what's the equivalent to being, like, second of four on a tour? I guess being, like, you know, billed five actors down or whatever in a movie?
Yeah. Like, I mean, at that point, it's like you're not. You're at the top... I mean, sure, there's the lead and support and stuff, but it's like you're at the top and you're headlining it, or you're in the credits.
Yeah, I mean, and there's also, it's also scalable, right? Because you can do big fish in a small pond, you know, films where you are lead because it's a smaller movie.
Yeah.
Or,
but I mean,
and a lot of times those turn into, oh, this guy was starred in this great independent film, and then suddenly...
Yeah, but it has to be great. Otherwise, people are like, oh, he starred in this thing and it tanked?
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to cast that
guy. Oh, he did this terrible movie that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then it's, I mean, it's the same thing of like, if a musician does an album that fucking tanks and then walks into a room of a record label and it's like, I want $10 million.
Although, an interesting thing is that we do, as audiences, we are a lot more forgiving of actors. We let them do bad movies and come back and do a good one. And sometimes, you know, if they have a few stinkers in a row, they might have to go away.
Well, and,
but with bands, a lot of times it's like one and done.
Yeah, but that's the same as what we were talking about with music the other day, in that it's... People are very comfortable with actors playing different roles and different characters. Like, an actor
in different genres.
Yeah, an actor can, like, Green Lantern, for example. They couldn't say, we're doing another Green Lantern right now. People would be like, no, fuck you. Even though Ryan Reynolds has since done Deadpool, it's like, that movie is tanked. But that movie is an entire band. Because a musician doesn't get to go do different things now. Because people are like, no, you are that band, and that's what you are, and that is what you do, and don't you dare do anything else, because that's blasphemous. But actors, they're fine to do different things. So they might be like, oh, that movie was shit. They're not like, that guy was shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he's doing a new one. Well, I like something that guy did, so I'm going to watch this too. It's completely different, but
and,
I love it.
And even that property, they'll do a Green Lantern at some point with somebody else and maybe do it well.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, I didn't like it with Ryan Reynolds, but I like this version with this guy. And whereas no one's going to go re-record an album that flopped.
Yeah.
It's like a different band. Oh, now this album's good because different guys are playing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm going to go to Chinese Democracy real quick. Maybe it'll be a hit this time.
I like Asking Alexandria doing Chinese Democracy. Yeah. Well, still gonna be that record that once had Shaquille O'Neal rapping on it.
Yep.
You know there's a Guns N' Roses song somewhere from Chinese Democracy with Shaquille O'Neal rapping on it. It's never come out.
I didn't, and I hope it never does.
Well, that's a perfect place to stop.
Yeah. To surmise, I'm the greatest actor of all time that no one knows about
yet. You're the next Batman.
Yep. Next Batman, and also I'm a black woman.
Yeah, well, that's the Asking Alexandria film that I'm doing.
Yeah.
Where you'll be played by a black woman.
It's going to be exciting. But I'm still going to do the voice.
I just want to do the voice for the American singer you had for 3 days.
Yes.
And then I'll start putting that in my resume as you may know me from.
Yeah.
That does it for this episode of Pop Curse. I want to say thanks to my guest, Danny. And I got to say, the new single, Into the Fire, from Asking Alexandria, from their forthcoming new album, produced by Matt Good of From First to Last, is, in my opinion, the best thing we've heard from Asking Alexandria so far. And that's quite a statement, you know, 5 records in. Danny, Ben, all of the guys, it's not just that it's a big, ambitious rock song, which it is, but it also has an authenticity to it, you know, lyrics that are actually, you know, poetic and clever and interesting, which, you know, if you just listen to this podcast, you know that Danny's a clever guy and has not only wit, but insightful things to say. But anyway, the music video for it is also really cool. And music videos are particularly in this genre, hard to pull off something that's interesting or unique, given that most videos tend to be, you know, a band playing in a warehouse while a cute girl is doing something spooky somewhere else. And this video is not that. It's pretty exciting. It's got a little Sin City vibe to it. I think people are commenting on that because it's in black and white and it's very cinematic. But I think it's really cool. I recommend it. And even if you're not an Asking Alexandria fan, or if you've never heard the band before, that's the video to go watch, Into the Fire, Asking Alexandria. You can find Danny on Twitter at Danny Warsnop. You can find me at Ryan Downey. You can find me on Instagram at SuperheroHQ. And you can also find Pop Curse on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you like what we're doing here with the Pop Curse podcast, please go into the iTunes store, give us a 5-star rating, write a nice review. The more of those reviews we get, the higher the visibility for the podcast, the more it's discovered by people, and the more people get to share in these fun conversations. I also want to talk about a couple of the other podcasts in the Pop Curse Network. There's Speak and Destroy, a podcast about all things Metallica. If you look that up and check it out, you'll see there are in-depth interviews with M. Shadows from Avenged Sevenfold, Mark Morton from Lamb of God, Blasco from Ozzy Osbourne's band, the metal god himself, Rob Halford of Judas Priest, Rob Flynn of Machine Head, and most recently, Michael Alago, the A&R executive from Elektra Records who signed Metallica in 1984. There's also No Prize from God, conversations with creative people about belief, unbelief, and everything between. In-depth conversations with Maddie Mullins from Memphis Mayfire, Jesse Leach from Killswitch Engage, Dwid Hellion from Integrity, Tim McTagg from Under Oath, author Michelle T, Episcopal priest and theologian Broderick Greer, and the most recent episode with Brazilian metal legend Max Cavalera, where we talk about Catholic saints, African deities, his baptism at the Vatican, his unapologetic belief in God, magic, ritualistic possessions, and so much more. It's a really fun conversation. Again, that's Speak and Destroy, a Metallica podcast, and No Prize from God. You can find both of those on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you're consuming podcasts. If there's somewhere where you think these podcasts should be, and they aren't, let us know. As always, you guys have been great, and I've been Ryan J. Downing.